All right. Well, that was actually a great lead into what I'm going to talk about, except at a bit different scale. So thanks for spending your Tuesday afternoon in Long Beach down in the basement with us. I'm going to talk about looking at biomass estimations from remotely sensed data from space and how that couples with some models that some of our group has been working on. A lot of our collaborators are part of a greater project called the Site-Specific Climate-Friendly Farming Project, which Dave Brown gave a talk regarding that earlier this morning. So first, let's break down this title. So assessing the spatio-temporal controls. So what we're interested in is how nitrogen is being taken up at the field scale across space and time. This is just an image of the farm I'm going to be talking about today, and this is a daily resolution of dry down from a digital camera. Next, we're going to talk about how we can estimate field scale nitrogen uptake using remotely sensed imagery. In our case, we use a satellite sensor called RapidEye. And lastly, we're going to talk about how we can use biophysical modeling and satellite imagery together to try to get more of a process-based understanding of what's driving that nitrogen uptake. So the motivation for this, as many of you have heard today, is that nitrogen use efficiencies, especially in the Palouse where we work, and you'll see some pictures, which is a really hilly region, we have huge variations in NUE across the field scale. And this map in particular, which was created using a satellite image, which I'll get into later. If you just look at the nitrogen balance, so if we estimate the harvested nitrogen and divide it by the applied nitrogen, we can see quite a big range in where nitrogen is being taken up versus what has been applied, and this is a uniform application at this farm. And as many of you know, improving nitrogen use efficiency can reduce losses of excess N to the environment and save farmers money by optimizing inputs. So what are these driving questions? Are to what extent can this remotely sensed data work and this model data? And so I'll talk a little bit about validation steps for that. And then how dependent is soil N up or plant N uptake on soil water in rain-fed wheat? And in addition to water, which is some of the future directions we're trying to go with this research, what are the controls on N uptake across space and time? So in order to do this research, we are working at four farms in the Palouse region, well, five farms, and we're taking automated measurements at these farms at specific points of soil temperature, moisture, and EC, and then there's a weather station at all these farms collecting 15-minute data, and then we have the satellite that's flying over these farms every 5 to 15 days, depending which satellite we're working with. And then manually, the greater members of our project collect a lot of data on soil inorganic nitrogen, soil carbon, bulk density. Our group focuses a lot on the plant stuff, and they usually just ignore us when we start talking about plants because they don't really care about what's going on above ground, more about what's going on below ground. But we collect data on LAI, leaf nitrogen concentration, and relative chlorophyll content. Again, this is the region we're working in here in northern Idaho and eastern Washington. It goes across a very large precipitation gradient over only two counties. The farm we'll be focusing on is the driest farm on the far east side of that map in Colfax, but we also work at farms out in Leland on the far west side of that map, getting about three times as much of the mean annual precip as what we see in Colfax. The Colfax farm in particular, as you can see, has very large hills, and this is really nice when you're creating regressions because it gives you a lot of N members. We focus here on the 2013 growing season. It was in spring wheat. This is a no-till farm, and this was under a uniform fertilizer application in a winter spring when I guess it went back to wheat again, rotation. With the mean annual precip of 280 to 400 millimeters. So the satellite we're working with is RapidEye, and I'm just going to throw one spectral response curve up at you, but you can see here on the y-axis reflectance, x-axis wavelength, and we just have highlighted here all the different bands that this satellite is sensitive to. And RapidEye is a satellite sensor that's collecting data at five-meter spatial resolution, and it flies over every 10 or so days. And in particular, we're focusing just on these two bands in the red edge and the near-infrared, and we use the normalized difference red edge index, which is just the near-infrared minus the red edge divided by the near-infrared plus the red edge. However, I should say we do test combinations of all these different bands, and this is our top performing one, so that's what we're focusing on today. The model, which has been largely I haven't really worked on at all, Nicole Ward here and another guy, Matt York, work on this, and they're doing a lot of the soil moisture routing, and this is a physically based model with an hourly time step, and we can also achieve the same spatial resolution as what we see with RapidEye. So, first, before we can compare these two, we want to validate them. And with the RapidEye satellite, you can see here on the y-axis, we just have total above ground nitrogen. On the x-axis, the NDRE value. And this is ranging across all of our farms, that whole precip index. And we can do pretty well, RMSC of about 20.5 kilograms per hectare with the NDRE. And I just put up the NDVI for comparison. Still performs fairly strong, but the NDRE does better because, as our last presenter mentioned, it doesn't saturate at some of those high biomass levels. And here's a map of the farm, which we'll be focusing on just on June 29th, which is peak biomass for this particular farm. High areas in blue and low in green and yellow. To validate the model itself for soil volumetric water content, we can look across space and see if this kind of makes sense. It's, I think, more difficult to validate across space unless you have a lot of sensors that you actually trust in that area. But if you just take one sensor here on the right and look at the actual data in blue and the model data in orange over time, over two seasons, you can see they track each other fairly closely. So what we can do with this, and I think it's fairly robust and quite simple, is we're just comparing, it's a simple ordinary least squares regression comparison of soil moisture routing model and this NDRE image. And what I like about this is you can then just get a slope of a line, which we can say is our field scale average of nitrogen uptake per water content. Of course, you'll notice the residuals are huge, and that makes sense because water isn't driving all the unuptake here, but it is a big player. So if you just highlight these two areas, here are these residuals that have high NDRE and low soil moisture might fall out in location B up there. Conversely, areas of low soil moisture and higher NDRE might fall out in that area A on the map. So what we can do is then plot these residuals. So we just take this this line and we bump it on its side and we categorize the different standardized residuals. And for our maps, we're going to use tan as kind of the field scale average. Areas that are in the oranges is suggesting they're really productive. There's more N uptake per unit H2O relative to the field average. And then the blue areas where there's less N uptake per unit H2O. So in summary, we're going to combine these two models. We're going to take the residuals and class them out into five groups. And then we're going to create maps like what you see on the bottom right here. And I've highlighted just two areas here in the top right part that in particular have a high N uptake relative to the amount of water, and these areas down that little circle in the bottom left where there's low N uptake per unit water. Of course, this leads to a lot more questions. In particular, in unit A, what is driving the low N uptake rates in this relative high water zone? And in area B, what is driving the high N uptake rates in this relative low water zone? And to get at this, we're going to use a lot more input variables, and of course that's going to make our understanding of what's going on a lot more complex. But some multivariate approaches we've started to work with include the random forest approach, which is very much a black box, but it's a neural network ensemble learning algorithm that basically works with these three variables, in this case soil, water, clay content, and bulk density. And we do have pretty high resolution maps of clay content and bulk density at these farms. And then you can use this value on the right side of this table to see how much explanatory power each one of these variables has. And then we can begin to map this spatially and get an idea of what is driving, but really what is just mostly related to these high and uptake zones. And in addition, we can work with models like CropSyst, which has way more variables than I really know what to do with right now. But that's the next step. In addition, we can look at Landsat imagery. So just to sum up about RapidEye, it's at a 5-meter spatial resolution, and it has the red edge band, which is really nice because we can avoid these saturation issues. But it also costs a lot of money. And the question is, do farmers really need this much detail? Is this really going to help the farmers? So Sam Finch back here started working with Landsat. And when you map the residuals from Landsat, you can see that these patterns actually come out really nicely and in very similar areas. And I think it still tells a nice story, especially at the management scale. Landsat, however, is at a 30-meter resolution, which means 36 of these RapidEye pixels can be stuffed into one Landsat pixel. There's no red edge band. This is just an NDVI product. And it's free and accessible and really easy to download. And you can see if you just look at the correlation between NDVI and Solo Wider from Landsat in the top right, it does well, but we don't really know if that means anything, but they are related. Of course, there are limitations. We're going to have errors in our validation. If we use this line to then map total above ground nitrogen across space and time and at different farms, we're going to have to adjust things. There are also model errors associated with physically based models like the SMR, but we have, I think, pretty advanced ways to validate those. Ground errors in our ground measurement techniques, which I know Sam in the field for the last two summers, every time we take a measurement, has wondered whether or not it means anything. And then statistical assumptions that we make, especially as we begin to include more variables. And like I mentioned earlier, extrapolation to other field conditions. So in conclusion, you can get a nice map of residuals like this and kind of begin to think about what are the processes driving these patterns, especially in these areas where you have dark blue or light red patterns. I think it's particular. I can't really think of a good analogy for election day, but it looks a bit like an election map. I don't know if we can really explain the processes behind those decisions either. But then, so the point here is like there's a lot of variation, right, as opposed to just taking a picture and it all looks green. So I think there's a lot of potential between merging techniques like this to begin to gain a better process-based understanding of what's going on. And, I mean, really what we're looking at is a landscape like this and something that Dave Huggins has been struggling with for years with much success, I should say. How do you manage a system like this? Thank you. So one of my advisors has a nice connection with RapidEye, so we get them for free. So I've never actually asked them for a budget, but I think it's like $130 per image. And so, you know, the image covers a lot of space. You could easily fit an entire farm in there. And that's actually, I think, pretty cheap in the realm of farm management. And some of the consultants in our area who work with farmers that we work with do use RapidEye to provide maps for their farmers.
I've got a question. Yeah. You said at the very end, you said, how do you manage a landscape like this? Well, obviously, people are managing those types of landscapes. How are you making it better?
That's a good question. So I think a lot of what is happening in our landscape is, you know, you'll see these maps of how nitrogen use efficiencies at the field scale, and you'll see these really wide ranges, and I can't quote you on any numbers, but I know like maybe even 10 to 80% of the nitrogen that's being applied of an area that's maybe from here, from me to the wall away, is seeing huge difference in nitrogen use efficiencies. So the whole goal behind a lot of this is to develop decision support tools to then help farmers or really help them better understand the spatial variability at which they should be applying X amount of fertilizer so as to reduce N losses. So, honestly, I don't know how that's collected. I know it's collected, it was, Dave can maybe answer, but some of the soil scientists we work with, they interpolate it across basin, I think. So, actually, Matteo Poggio is giving a talk at 3:45, I think. Is that right? And he's talking about how we're mapping those soils across space, and he basically drives around with a big penetrometer, and it gets soil data at 10 meter. I think he takes a sample every 10 meters across the field. The bulk density and the clay content data, I pulled at the very last minute just to throw in an example of what we plan to do in the future, so I can't answer completely.
Take it to the lab or some kind of a estimated office.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.